Today's got a class of us in Vietnam with its primordial graph.
Yeah, thank you very much, Neej and Lathan. Today I'm going to talk about CMB anomalies from primordial gravitational waves. And this talk is a little bit out of date because this is the talk I gave 2 months ago, but I think the situation is more or less the same 2 months ago and now about the primordial gravitational waves. And the situation is we don't know yet and we need to wait further. So in March, BICEP announced a somehow detection of R is equals 2.2. And if this were primordial, this could be extremely interesting and extremely important because the primordial gravitational wave is considered to be the fingerprint of God. It's a very direct signal from inflation or from alternative to inflation. Yeah, yes. This is, I forgot originally who said that, but someone said that. Yeah, but recently, as we all know, there is a debate about. Yeah, we can have a discussion. Yeah, I'm not really going into that, but recently there is debate about dust for these two group of people that they are. Saying it's not primordial, but instead it's something really look like gravitational wave, but not really. When we see the debates, there are reasons that the signal look like primordial, and there are also reasons that the signal look like dust, and we don't really know. For the reason that the signal look like primordial, one is B-mode polarization signal as a function of the spectral index in the frequency space. And as a function of spectral index, we know CMB is a black body spectrum. And dusk and the secretion has different spectral index. And this is the first version of BICEP, and this is the published version. And in the published version, they claim there is 1.7 sigma preference of CMB compared with dust from the spectral index of the black body spectrum, coming from the BICEP 1 and BICEP 2 cross correlation at 100 gigahertz and 150. And also, the BICEP paper studied the foreground coming from the somehow the data, the model of the foreground, including the data-driven model and the previous models. And this is from what BICEP paper was talking about, the largest possible contribution coming from so-called DDM2 in the first version, but in the second version, DDM2 disappears, and the largest coming from DDM1. But in any case, the Flauger, Hill, and Spiegel paper gave a different estimation for DDM1 and DDM2. They call DDM1 prime and DDM2 prime that they have larger contribution, and they claim it could be possible that the dust signal can make up the primordial gravitational waves. And they are, these are the map they have reconstructed depending on different zero levels from the Planck slice. And what we can see is actually from their reconstructed map, because the BICEP region is somewhere here. And this is the Planck map with the BICEP region covered, which is in April or May, I forgot. And we see from the Planck map that actually the near BICEP regime sounds like has a relatively fine polarization fraction, but from the Flauger and the Colibrator map, they have somehow higher polarization fraction. So from that, it might be that the Flauger et al. Paper kind of make a case that it is possible to have large dust contribution to make up the signal, but it might be we don't really know the case. And another kind of evidence that the signal is primordial instead of dust is the BICEP data points as a function of the multiple moment is essentially measuring the first peak or the second peak if we count the reionization. Is essentially measuring the peak of the gravitational wave. And we know for dust, there is no reason there is a peak. But again, this is not statistically significant. So there are a number of evidence for the signal to be primordial, and it sounds like quite economical to interpret as a primordial signal. But on the other hand, there is a tension between the Bessel and Planck, which I will also come back to in a minute. And from the tension, it sounds like either there is a small chance that in the simplest inflation model, and both Bessel and Planck is correct, and otherwise there need to be new physics. So what we really need to compare, which to believe, should be the dust versus new physics, which is we know new physics is quite expensive. But in any case, we need to be patient. And for the time being, let's remove the possibility of dust. From internet. From internet. I forgot which exact. This rabbit come from internet, and this CMB I put together myself.
What is the concept of a rabbit trying to imitate a hand? I mean, is that something on the internet?
Yeah, this is from the internet.
I see, okay.
But that's not about bicep.
It wasn't about bicep, actually, I think. That's
yeah, right. About something else.
What was it about? Just out of curiosity.
I cannot remember because I steal this figure for a long time ago, and the first time I used this figure is actually the CMB versus large cell structure.
CMB versus large cell structure, okay.
Yeah, but yes, it's a long time, so I don't remember where it originally came from. Yeah, but nevertheless, so let's first forget about the dust case and think about if the B-mod polarization is primordial, and what is the implication for these primordial gravitational waves. And there are a lot of implications. First, we immediately can reconstruct the inflationary potential around of order 1 E-fold with very high precision. Because we already know a lot of data, now we know the energy scale, so we can immediately reconstruct the gravitational, the inflationary potential. And there are also a lot of things that we know and a lot of things that challenge our knowledge of inflation. That before Bessel, the biggest challenge for inflation in theoretical model building is eta problem, which is why eta is so unnaturally small in terms of string theory. But now, if the bicep is primordial, the major challenge become not eta problem, but instead somehow epsilon problem, that why epsilon is so unnaturally large. Because in string theory, when they build inflation models, they want to have the effective field theory under control. And when the effective field theory is under control, it's very hard to get large field inflation. And actually, in case of string theory, it's even worse that in effective field theory, we can make the UV completion scale as the Planck scale. But if we believe perturbative string theory, we need something like string scale, which is again lower than Planck scale. But the string scale is kind of 1 E-fold during inflation, if we believe the basic result. So this is a big challenge. And definitely there are a lot of discussion, for example, the axions and a lot of that. I'm not actually going into that aspect, but instead today I'm going to talk about two topics concerning the anomalies of the CMB experiments. One is the new proposals for existing anomalies, and another is new anomalies brought by Bessel II. First, let me talk about the existing anomalies. We know that from the WMAP age and also from Planck, there are a few anomalies at low L, including the direction-dependent power symmetry and about 2 sigma evidence of local shape Nagel-Shanti, and the deficit of power at low L, and also mode alignment, cold spot, and a few others. So all of them are at low L, and the CMB is much better. I mean, the theory and observation fits much better at high L in the CMB. So we want to build the theory. So either it could be cosmic variance, because it's low L, we have finite number of data. But if we believe some of the anomalies at low L are of primordial origin, what we would need traditionally is to introduce some scale-dependent features for inflation. And to be precise, for low L, I mean L is smaller than of order 100. And L smaller than of order 100, it means about 4 e-fourths of inflation. And 4 e-fourths of inflation is quite embarrassing number, because if we want some anomaly, for example, anisotropy, to be exponentially diluted during inflation, it cannot live longer than 1 e-fourth. It cannot live for 4 e-fourths. And on the other hand, if we want the anomaly to be slow suppressed, it should survive for of order 60 e-fourth or 100 e-fourth, because slow parameter is a few percent. It 4 e-fourths is too quick for the slow suppression to dilute. And we know there are no other energy scale naturally for inflation. So the 4 e-fourth is not so natural energy scale. And people could either do something by hand on the inflationary potential, such that at L smaller than 100, the corresponding modes are anomalous, and later the corresponding modes are not.
Lower anomalies don't have to last for 4 e-fourths because they just have lower L, so it could be just one e-fourth.
Ah. Because the 4 e-fourth is estimated like a logarithm of 100 divided by 2. 2 is the lowest L, and 100 is the definition of low L here. And the logarithm of that is about 4, it's 3.9. So people could put by hand some scale dependence, but again, that's by hand. And they need to explain the look elsewhere effect. That's why it doesn't happen at L equal to 10, L equal to 1000, but L equal to 100. So here, yes? Very different.
Some of them really have to go to 100 to see them diluted, right? And there are things like the running that are manifestly happening at much lower L than 100. Then you will get a lower down these 4 e-fourths that you're saying, for example. For that.
By much lower, how low do you mean?
Well, I think if you go like a fourth of that, like L equals, when you get from
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
The number really equals the number 4.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really for
us 3 instead of 4. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's a bit better.
Right, I agree. If you do running at L equal to 20, it improves the fit. But I think if you want the fit to be better, I think it should be L of order 40. For the suppression of spectrum, because the suppression of spectrum is L smaller than 40. Yeah, and in terms of logarithm, 40 and 100 is not too different. Yeah, I could say 40. Yeah, I will show you a figure actually about that. So this is about if we put some scale dependence by hand. And here we propose a new possibility, which is we use scale-invariant physics to generate the CMB anomalies. But the scale-invariant physics is actually in the tensor sector. And from that, we have scale-dependent observable anomalies. And the idea is from the Bicep announcement about the tensor mode, that we know that during that at the recombination time, the horizon size is of order L equal to 100. And the tensor mode decays when it returns to the horizon. So the tensor modes at L smaller than 100, sorry, greater than 100 is not important. And if the anomaly come from the tensor sector, we only need to care about L up to 100, and we don't need to care about here. Even if the anomaly in the primordial case space is scale invariant. So this is the idea of the mechanism. And here is a detail which actually slightly explains about your question about if is L of order 100 or about 20 or 40. That so if R is 0.2, the tensor spectrum contribution to the temperature power spectrum is about 10% at L of order 2 or of order 10. And at L of order 100 is about 1% or 1 or 2%. And after L equal to 100, it decays very quickly. So we don't need to compare consider it at all. So when I was talking about 100, it's really of order 100. And the decaying profile is like this. if we want to explain the power spectrum. And if we want to explain Nagel-Chianti, it's this part, which is square root of the power spectrum. And here is an example. I will come back to this figure later about what it really means. But the idea is, if we have some anomaly in the tensor sector, this anomaly could look like this. That it sounds like here there is a huge difference, and at L of order 100 or greater than 100, the difference decays because of the tensor to temperature transfer function become really small at large L. And here, for this mechanism, I will give an example, which is the anisotropy. And for this example, we actually studied two models. One model is the anisotropic inflation, and another is solid inflation. For the anisotropic inflation,
does the vector perturbation transfer function is similar? Is that right?
Ah, right.
So you could alternatively kind of hope to explain both things.
Right.
But it just happens to be that this model produces tensors.
But the vector is also decaying on super Hubble scales. So if we want vector field, we need some anisotropy or other physics until recombination. For tensor sector, we need
very big vectors to begin with.
Right. Yeah, but.
Oh, yeah, you're right. To explain why it's.
Yeah. Yeah, so for the tensor case, so we need something exotic during inflation, but after inflation, we don't care. So that exotic thing decay away. But on the other hand, if there are some active source like cosmic strings which produce vector modes, I'm not sure. That might be possible. So one of the models that we are considering, which can give the large anisotropy of tensor sector, is the charged anisotropic inflation model. That we consider like this. And the anisotropic inflation model is first proposed by Soda and collaborators. And here we consider a generalization of that. Consider a charged inflation field coupled to a gauge field by two ways. One way is this kind of coupling, which breaks the conformal invariance. And the other way is from the charged coupling. And in this anisotropic inflation model, Soda et al. Show that there is an attractor solution where the A field has a time-dependent expectation value. So here, if we consider the charged coupling, there could be this kind of term coming from charged coupling. And here, the E squared is the coupling constant. And the AIAJ provides a source of anisotropy. And here, there is also GIJ and phi squared. Now we want to do perturbation theory to calculate the perturbations. So we want to calculate the second order Lagrangian. And in the second order Lagrangian, let's see how we perturb the theory. We can perturb the theory in two ways. One way is we can perturb the delta phi sector from phi to delta phi. And as a result, we have the scalar anisotropy. And on the other hand, we can perturb from GIJ to the tensor sector. And as a result, we have tensor anisotropy. And here the point is we don't want large scalar anisotropy. If we have large scalar anisotropy, which is as large as the tensor anisotropy, our mechanism doesn't work because
phi is the inflaton.
Yeah, phi is the inflaton. It's a complex field. One direction is inflaton, and the angular is something else. And here our mission is to have the scalar sector to be very isotropic, but the tensor sector to be anisotropic. Because if we want both sectors to be anisotropic, our mechanism doesn't work, that the anisotropy doesn't decay at high L. So we only want the tensor sector to be anisotropic. And it turns out, in this model, it's very natural to happen. Because to have large gravitational waves, we need large field inflation. And for large field inflation, we know phi is very large. By very large, I mean of order 10 M Planck. And phi squared, there is of order 100 M Planck. So there is a 100 factor out of here. But on the other hand, if we perturb the phi into delta phi, that largeness no longer exists. So if we compare this term with this term, we see this term is of order 100 times larger than this term. As a result, the tensor anisotropy is of order 100 times larger than the scalar anisotropy. So we can have the scalar anisotropy to be well within the experimental bound, but the tensor anisotropy is really strong. As strong as almost non-perturbative. But technically, we need the anisotropy to be somehow small to do perturbative calculation to see what's the correlation function. And here are the results that the blue line is the isotropic case, and the red line is anisotropic.
Question. Does this model have the strong coupling problem that at some point the coupling constant becomes more bigger?
We don't have to, because we only need to. So there are two reasons we don't have to. First is we don't want to use the vector field to explain the magnetic field.
Right.
So eventually that field could decay away.
No, I guess I'm just wondering, for these calculations,
you're
doing the perturbative calculations, so you should make sure that the final structure constant is not bigger than 1.
Right, right. Yeah, we have made sure of that. First, the final structure constant is small. It's 10 to the minus 3. Yeah.
So that changes the final structure.
Right. Yeah, and the other thing we have checked is the energy density coming from the gauge theory is smaller compared with the inflating.
I just want to know how much does F change? You said because I mean change in F changes your final structure constant, right?
Right. So F change the term with F, that term.
So you go back,
right.
It might be
right.
So
yeah. So this term actually changes exponentially.
It changes exponentially.
Right. So eventually, at the late time, it's very small. So at the early time, it's relevant. And at the late time, it's very small. So we cannot use.
F is very small.
I need to check what's F. But what I know is the energy density coming from the gauge sector is very small at the late times.
But this is a statement about the vacuum.
Yeah.
That F goes into, if you canonically normalize the, the vector, the magnetic field, and that goes, F goes into the definition of electric charge, and we know that we want that to be less than one for the theory to be perturbative.
So here, maybe this vector field is not supposed to be the actual E&M vector field, is it?
Not supposed to be.
Right.
Yeah,
that's not my point. I'm saying just my point is that this is, this, you want this theory to be perturbative so that you trust one loop or zero loop. Three results. So E should be less than 1. The effective E, for effective final structure constant, it should be less than 1 because that's what suppresses the loop contributions to any classical process, right?
Right, but.
Can't you just choose it to be as small as you want?
But the thing is, it's moving, it's changing exponentially, so that's the problem that if it changes very fast, then it's either very small or it was very big at some point, either late times or early times. So that's what
I don't think that's a problem because what we are calculating actually is essentially the gauge coupling.
Uh-huh.
And what we have is this sector could be non-perturbative, and we control the calculation to be perturbative. And this sector is much weaker. So in this case, I think everything is perturbative.
Okay. But we don't do any loop calculation.
As long as the tree level is small, I don't think the loop is important.
Well, it does sound like it is true that as F, you mean F gets smaller towards the end of inflation.
Right, right.
And that would be like 1 over the coupling constant.
Yeah, right. So that means coupling constant gets big. F gets smaller and this coupling constant is getting big. So that could be potentially problematic. And you see that in the loops of the scalar, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like for QED, loops of electron positron, they would have larger contribution, they have larger power. They're suppressed by powers of alpha, basically.
Yeah.
Right? If alpha is of order 1, then they're not suppressed. So that would be, I think, the question is. Well, I guess it's just something to check. You have to make sure that for the range that you're using for your calculations, is that the case? And presumably, it's something that is easy to check.
Yeah, maybe I need to check the late time. But for the early time, because here is tree level, and the tree level is perturbative. So,
but I don't think that's what the loops are.
Yeah.
So if the scales that he's calculating have left, relevant CMB scales or something, if those left, all the perturbations vary. very much in the perturbative regime. I mean, you're worried about the late time, smaller scale.
I'm not talking. No, I'm not worried about that. I mean, I'm just talking about this particular calculation. But usually, the reason loops are not important in pressure calculations is that everything is Planck suppressed. So, so all the interactions are very small, basically, if you get a scalar equation as well. But then here you have this other nonlinear interaction, which is basically electromagnetic interaction, and the final structure constant, and that's controlled by that E squared divided by F, I guess. F goes to, yeah, so E squared divided by F, or E divided by F. So that, you have to make sure that that other coupling is also small, otherwise you cannot cross tree level calculation. And I think that's, so that's a different calculation from, I think that's different from anything that you've done at tree level.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I need to look at that. Yeah, so here is the result of the tree level calculation. This is the temperature power spectrum, which because of the reason we show here that the scalar is very isotropic, tensor is anisotropic. So we see indeed at small error there is anisotropy, but at large error there is no anisotropy. And in this model, because there is anisotropy, there is also EB cross-correlation, and a TB cross-correlation, and EB cross-correlation for L and L plus 1 moles. The TB could be measured, is marginally comparable with the cosmic variance, but the EB is probably too small. Ah, the M is the spherical harmonics, YLM, the M. Here we didn't sum over M for the...
I see. Okay.
Because
so
it's anisotropic. Yeah.
Direction,
right.
Which is given by A.
Right.
And what's the amplitude of that?
The Planck suggests is 7% at a small L.
No, but I think in the model, what's the amplitude of...
Ah, in this model. In this model, the amplitude is a few percent, depending on which parameter we choose. The a few percent come from follows. From the tensor sector, we can actually get the tensor sector completely anisotropic. But to control is the perturbation theory. We like the anisotropy to be about 10% or maybe 20%, something like that.
What parameter in the model can you have to change to give 10%?
What parameter?
Yeah, right in the action you showed
us. Yeah.
In this action, what parameter is the one that controls that?
Yeah, so here the E squared, if I remember, is 10 to the minus 4.
So that's the thing you have to tune to get
there. Right, yeah. So I choose this parameter simply, here is barely perturbative. So they are the TT, TB, and EB correlations. And this is for the model of anisotropic inflation. And another model that we have considered is solid inflation. From solid inflation, it has been pointed out by Peloso and the collaborator that in solid inflation, the anisotropy could exist to very high L. This is because the solid inflation model has a clock field, which is essentially the scale factor itself. So the dependence on the scale factor for inflation should be very mild. And for the same reason, the anisotropy is not effectively diluted away from solid inflation compared with conventional inflation models. And because of that, there could be anisotropy. But again, that anisotropy extends to very high L, not only L of order 100. But we consider the case of not only the scalar sector, but also tensor sector. And it turns out that in solid inflation, the tensor sector could be very anisotropic. The tensor scalar cross correlation could be very anisotropic compared with the other terms. And there is a technical reason. I don't know exactly what the physical reason, but the technical reason is if we calculate this term grows on super Hubbard scales. So it is proportional to n, the Effordian number, which is 60. But the other term doesn't grow on super Hubbard scale. So in this case, the
either zeta or h don't freeze on super Hubbard
scale. There is interaction.
Hmm? I think that's theta.
Yeah, theta. Right. Theta. Yeah.
So zeta
in solid inflation, zeta is not conserved quantity.
Zeta, that's also not
is not conserved, but the time evolution is suppressed by Solero parameter.
Doesn't change very much.
Right, doesn't change very much. Yeah, but this term, so yeah, because this term is large, and this term is initially small, but it's anisotropic, and it grows. Well, I don't have a physical interpretation, but come out of the calculation. The other term doesn't grow, but this term grows for the anisotropy. So as a result, the zeta H cross correlation could be large, and so this is the cross correlation that we can see. For example, the green line and blue line correspond to different models of solid inflation. And we see for m equal to zero, if one is larger, m equal to L, that one becomes smaller. Because it's cross correlation instead of autocorrelation. So it could be either positive or negative. And similarly, one can calculate TB and EB correlations. And here, there is an interesting question about the low L suppression. That's because here we see so this is m equal to zero, and this is m equal to L. And we see for m equal to L, for example, in one model of solid inflation, there could be low L suppression. And there is a question if one can use this cross correlation to suppress the low L CMB temperature power spectrum at L smaller than about 50. So originally, in this paper, they claim it might be possible, but later we find it's mathematically not possible if we calculate the covariant matrix in a perfect case, where if we sum over m, which means we average over all the angles, actually the cross correlation vanishes. So we cannot use the cross correlation to generate the low L suppression in terms of averaged over direction for the power spectrum. But actually now I'm not very sure about our statement about saying it's impossible. Because actually in the CMB sky, we cannot measure the full sky and make the power spectrum. But instead we actually only measure about 30 points of the sky to make the power spectrum. If you look at the map making about the power spectrum. So there is a big mask. If we only use the 30 point of the sky, the average over angle is not very efficient. I'm not sure if it means that we cannot really sum over m, but instead we need to put into some f sky factor into the sum. And I'm not sure if it changed the result. If it does change the result, it might still be possible that the cross correlation could suppress the low L power spectrum. But at this point, I'm not sure yet. So I consider it is so far an open question. And there is another example which is not so successful, so let me skip, about Nangao-Shanti. That we can, so the result of the story is actually we can get the tensor sector to be non-Gaussian and the scalar sector to be relatively Gaussian. But eventually there is a problem because the tensor non-Gaussian is very hard to probe. There are two suppression factors. One suppression factor is R is 0.2, or maybe R is lower than 0.2, which is smaller than 1. And another is tensor only extend to L of order 100 and decays after that. But for scalar sector, we can probe up to L of order 2000. So for Nangao-Shanti, it's really hard to detect a tensor sector. And we can somehow get a stronger tensor Nangao-Shanti than conventional inflation models, but we cannot really get the tensor sector to be easier to detect compared with the scalar sector. Yeah, so this is one thing that I wanted to talk about, which is the existing CMB anomalies. Now let me take the brief 20 minutes to talk about another possibility, which is the new anomalies brought by the BICEP2. And about the new anomaly, actually, I want to consider the blue NT, which is also considered by a group here. So the first question is we want to ask is how precise do we know about the NT, the tensor special index? So if we want to know how precise, we need to actually know how to convert from K-space to L-space. Because the NT is defined in the K-space, but the measurement is made in aerospace. And for the tensor sector, it's a little bit not so trivial to relate that, which is posited in Cosmo Coffee by Anthony Lewis, that if we look at here, this is K, and Lewis plot a few different R. In this case, we see, because the naive relation between K and R is simply a linear relation, and this is the linear relation, which is the dotted line. And for the scalar mode, the dominant contribution is more or less indeed the linear relation. But for the tensor, it's actually not the case, that there are two effects. One effect is the contribution is moving towards large K, and the other is the contribution is concentrating towards the center. So because they are basically the points, that data points that BICEP is measuring, and for these data points, it sounds like they are at a quite wide L. But actually, what they are probing in the K space is quite narrow.
Are these just the transfer functions?
Yes, exactly. This is the transfer function. This is transfer function. This is the beam power, which is essentially a transfer function.
Transfer from tensor
from
the
CMB beam mode polarization.
Right. The top one is temperature.
Yes.
One.
Yeah. Scalar to temperature.
Right. So
what's the bottom plot?
This bottom plot is the BICEP beam power, and so this is basically the envelope of the transfer function. Sorry, band power, not beam power.
That's the band power.
Yeah.
Pass back through the transfer function.
Pass back.
I think the question is, given L and CMB, what range of K of tensors is coming from?
Yeah, I understand that in the top two plots, I just don't understand that in the top.
So the thing is that bicep L and C1 L, right? Because these are like pushed back by some values.
Oh, so this is average, this is just that average in a bin.
Yeah, for one L, it is average over K in K space.
The oscillation is
kind of constant. Yeah, and yeah, because of that oscillations, so it's not exactly the linear relation, but instead, it's actually probing a much narrow range of K in the primordial space. And based on that, one can actually estimate how precise do we know about NT. Because NT is log K over log R, so the error can be estimated as the error of this guy and the error of this guy. And here, the delta K, which can be read in this figure, is about this value at K about 0.01. And also we know, so if we don't consider dust, R is 0.2, and this is 1 sigma of R. From that, we can estimate the delta NT is of order 1. And this is indeed the case, that if we do MCMC and see what's the BICEP only constraint about NT and R, the constraint about NT is indeed the delta NT is of order 1. And also, it prefers a blue NT at about 1.5 sigma. It prefers blue NT because there are a few high points in the BICEP figure. And these high points, so traditionally, if we assume it's a flat primordial tensor power spectrum, this must be either from Lansing or from statistical fluctuation or anything else, because the tensor power spectrum is decaying at this range. But I will come back to this point. But here, I only use BICEP data. I didn't use Planck yet. Yeah, I will show you when we use Planck.
But if you don't use Planck, then there is no constraint.
There are some constraints. There is a very weak constraint.
I see what you're saying. So this is just...
just the BICEP.
Okay.
Yeah, just using BICEP. And you see there are a few high points. So it prefers the tensor spectrum go towards that a few high points. And... to see that if we only use the first five bins instead of all the bins of BICEP, we see there is no longer preference for blue NT. And this is the BICEP story. And now this is the Planck story. That we know before BICEP, I mean, before adding the tensor part, there is already a power deficit at L smaller or equal than 40. And the amplitude of deficit is about 5 to 10%. and at about 2.5 to 3 sigma. So this part is already low. And now if there is tensor, primordial tensor fluctuation, the theoretically predicted power become higher. So it fit data even worse. And the enhancement naively can be estimated as if R is 0.1 or 0.2, it will be of order 5% or 10%. And it could be another at least 2.5 to 3 sigma. And this is indeed the case, that if the Planck and WMAP polarization doesn't really matter, but nevertheless, if Planck is added, you can see that the parameter space here is largely cutted, and the blue NT is strongly preferred at greater than 3.5 sigma. And here is the Dirk chi square, where this is only bicep 2 only, with R and NT as free parameter, Dirk chi square is about 3. But adding Planck, the Dirk chi square is more than 10. So this is quite significant because the, only one additional parameter. So if people consider running, adding one parameter, the Dirk chi square is about 7. And isocurvature even lower Dirk chi square. Those numbers coming from this paper. And if people consider a stack to reconcile the tension, the Dirk chi square is quite large, but that's a three parameter model instead of one parameter. So for one parameter, this is a quite large improvement for Dirk chi square. But nevertheless, NT cannot be too blue, because if NT is greater than 2, the primordial B mode dominates over Lansing. So the polar bear signal of Lansing B mode could be a constraint about primordial NT. So this is the polar bear experiment, which measure the Lansing at L of order 500 or 1000. And if we add the polar bear constraint, the very blue part of the of this figure is cut. So this is the exclusion curve of 2 sigma and 3 sigma for polar bear, sorry, 1 sigma and 2 sigma for polar bear. So we can see this part is actually cut. And another constraint is if we assume there is no running of NT, so the NT is exponentially, I mean, the tensor power spectrum is exponentially growing towards very small scales, then there must be constraint at least times that the tensor shouldn't become non-perturbative. And that's a very strong constraint that if we assume constant NT for about 50 to 60 EFORs, the whole gray regime, this part, in this part, the primordial gravitational wave become eventually of order 1. And in that case, there should be disaster because the tensor mode could induce scalar mode, and scalar mode can form primordial black holes. But there are additional assumptions for the NT doesn't have running. And so what's the implication for this NT greater than 0 signal? So the implication is it is preferred at more than 3 sigma compared with the minimal model, because there are also other models. And most significant is there could be foreground. And there could be either running isocurvature, maybe neutrino, and also other models. And here, the advantage of having blue NT is it has a higher confidence level compared with the other models. But and there is also another advantage is it can be tested very soon. I will show a forecast of Planck in a minute. Yeah, in any case, so the other model may not be so easy to be tested. But there is also a disadvantage of NT, which is it has a smaller theoretical prayer, because typically for inflation, we know NT should be negative instead of positive, because the energy scale of inflation is lower down if we assume the non-energy condition to be respected. And there is a tension between bicep and Planck. So actually, this is also a debate about tension. Some people say the two experiments are not in a tension, but I think it is in a tension. Because for people say it's not in a tension, they compare the value of R. But actually, Planck is huge data set, and bicep also have a lot of data points. We cannot squeeze all of them into one number to say there is no tension. Instead, we it's natural to consider alternative model and see if the alternative model have non-trivial prediction to see if there is tension for the minimal model. And in this case, in the case of blue NT, the tension is about 2 to 3 sigma. So this is the value of 3.5 sigma minus the a few high points for the bicep only result, because bicep only have 1.5 sigma. So I think this should be a tension. And also the people here also talk about tension and also about 3 sigma, I think. And here are some forecasts about the future experiments and how well they could see the gravitational wave if we allow NT to be a free parameter. And this is a work in collaboration with Yin Zhe Ma, and actually it's mainly his work. And another thing we need to emphasize is what we did is according to the Blue Book of Planck about the noise level of Planck. But actually, there are systematics which may be very hard to control. So what we do is actually a Planck-like experiment instead of exactly Planck. And for a Planck-like experiment, this is the noise level. And we can see at small L, the noise is very low. At high L, it's relatively higher. So if a Planck-like experiment want to see the individual L, if they want to see the tensor mode, then the only chance is the reionization bump. But on the other hand, at here, because there are a lot more data points, so actually if people consider statistics, this part and this part give comparable contribution to what they can see about tensor modes. So eventually they can actually see the case of blue NT very well, if there is blue NT. And this is the signal to noise of R as a function of NT. And we see for Planck is almost a flat, for Planck-like experiment is almost a flat. But on the other hand, for other experiments, for example, for spider, at large NT, the signal to noise drops because spider has a larger beam size. But Planck can probe to a very small scale, so it's almost not changing. And here is NT as a, so here is delta NT as a function of NT, which is the arrow bar. And we can see that if NT is of order 1, the arrow bar become of order 0.3 or 0.6 for R is 0.1 or 0.2. So in this case, a blue NT, one can see some signal about blue NT in Planck or Planck-like experiment.
When you say R is some number, you fix that some scale, I guess, because you have a, what is the scale like?
That's k equal to 0.01 inverse megaparsec, because that's more or less where Bicep make experiment. And this is the signal to noise of NT as a function of NT. Basically, it's a transformation of the previous figure. And we see if NT is of order 1 or greater than 1, the signal to noise could be quite high for Planck-like experiments or the future CMB experiments. So this is about the observational side of blue NT. And so here are about theory. So as I was talking about, for inflation, it's very hard to generate blue NT scenarios because of non-energy condition. That the gravitational wave power spectrum is proportional to h squared and nothing else in the standard scenario. But h squared is decaying as a function of time. But there are so many models of inflation, so one can find some corner where there could be blue NT, including a modified vacuum. Because if the vacuum is a non-Banach Davis vacuum, it's largely unconstrained. So people need to build a realistic model, but otherwise everything could be possible if one allowed a modified vacuum. And also there could be particle production. And so the idea is to produce particles and the particle induce a classical source of gravitational waves. And in this case, the tilt of NT depending on how much particle are produced during inflation as a function of scale, which is also unconstrained. And there could be modified tensor dispersion relation. I will go into this very briefly later. And also Galileans, I will go into briefly. And also solid inflation. And there are also alternative to inflation scenario which can generate blue NT, including the string gas cosmology, which actually the blue NT is a prediction in string gas cosmology. But the NT cannot be too blue because NT is negative NS, so it's slow suppressed blue NT in string gas. And for metal bonds, in some model of metal bonds, they can get blue NT. And here, let me give two examples about blue NT from the primordial inflationary scenario. One example is modified tensor dispersion relation. And here we gave a scenario which we can modify the tensor dispersion relation from the non-commutativity. That here the pi is the canonical momentum of the tensor of the Hij, the tensor fluctuation. And if we add some non-commutativity to the tensor sector, in this case, eventually we end up with a modified dispersion relation for the tensor. And that modified dispersion relation gave contribution to the power spectrum, something like this, such that at large k, we have the standard tensor power spectrum, which is Gill invariant. But at small k, where k is smaller than some coupling constant, this alpha is actually the amplitude of this alpha times the pivot scale. So if k is smaller than alpha k pivot, the tensor spectrum become very blue, proportional to k to the cube, which is, so this is the primordial tensor power spectrum, and we can see there are different value of alpha. I forgot which value actually, but this is the larger alpha, this is smaller alpha, and this is eventually the alpha value is so small that the modification is have not yet returned to our horizon. So essentially, the black line means there is no modification. And we see the tensor fluctuation has a suppression here, and for the temperature power spectrum also have a suppression of order 10%. And if we fit this model using Bessel only, we see there is no constraint about small alpha, because Bessel only doesn't really constrain the NT very strongly. But nevertheless, there is a peak for non-zero alpha. And alpha of order zero means that the non-commutativity scale is about the pivot scale. And here, pivot scale, we choose k is 0.01. So we see there is a peak for Bessel only case. But there is no constraint. But if we choose to use Planck data together with Bessel, we see this contour closes. And actually, the running of NT is this kind of running of blue NT is again preferred by more than 3 sigma, similar to the constant NT scenario. And another possibility to generate blue NT is making use of the Galileans, because Galilean is one consistent way to break the null energy condition, but on the other hand, doesn't have ghost. But traditionally, as far as I know, there are two existing Galilean models to have blue NT, but all of them also have blue NS, which is, we hope we have red NS. But actually, as a proof of concept, we can show that it's possible to have blue NT, but on the other hand, red NS. And actually, the idea is making use of the Kaskuten of Niesh and the collaborator consider. This is not exactly Kaskuten because there is also the linear term in X. But by introducing this term doesn't modify energy density, but modify pressure. And as a result, making use of this term, we can construct a Galilean inflation model where we have blue NT, but red NS, which could fit data better.
And that's a violent non-energy condition.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This Galilean construction. And in this model, actually, there is also a equilateral non-Gaussianity, which is at least of order 10. So we can prove it's at least 10. But but 10 is fine so far. So this kind of model can be constrained from a future experiment about Nagashianti of the equilateral shape. And as a conclusion, so we discussed about two topics. One is the new proposals for existing anomaly, which is the CMV low error anomaly we are trying to explain using the tensor sector. And the other is the new anomaly, essentially the tension between WMAP and Planck, sorry, between BICEP and Planck brought by the BICEP tool. Thank you. This term, right. Actually, this is exactly why there is a lower bound on FNL, because FNL basically measuring how different is the perturbation compared with the background. So very different perturbation compared with background means there is a large equilateral Nagashianti, similar to the case of DBI.
So, but because one thing is this is not Galilean, because Galilean has the specific forms for KMG.
Somehow, but
yeah, and I said like that. Your form of X, that's
yeah.
Form
so in my understanding, because in the yeah, maybe I could call it G inflation more precisely instead of Galilean. Yeah, but typically people call Galilean, or maybe I call Galilean for this kind of term and generalize Galilean or Fondesky.
It's called the
for,
action, which has invented.
Right. Yeah.
Invented here in Waterloo.
Yeah.
KGB action is one.
Yeah, so maybe I should call a subset of Hondesky action.
That thing is kinetically
particular.
It's kinetically
derived,
right?
That's right,
KGB, kinetically
derived, right? That's right.
Yeah.
So we discovered Hondesky action.
Yeah, yeah.
Fairly, you gave Hondesky credit. Okay, so I see. So I'm just wondering if this model has this, is there any, I guess this thing, there is no ghost? And you check that, and then you're using NS and NT, you calculate
the cryptic blue. Right. So we can construct slow roll solution.
So the model you construct is consistent with everything.
Right.
Do you have any comments on alignment of anomalies? Do you expect these kind of low anomalies to give you something like cold spot in the same direction? Or the bulk flow or something. You know how like does this kind of back to
zero? When
you generate anomalies in this way, do you also
have an alignment? I'm not sure. For the tensor sector, I don't know a way. So the problem is because what we want is to have a transition at L of order 100. But for the alignment issue is the first of few L. So it's a different scale. Yeah, so we need to do something additionally non-trivial to do that if we want.
Because the alignment's on the
quadrupole. Right. Yeah, that's a very low error. And for the cold spot, it's kind of position space feature, which is also another different issue, I think.
But I guess we have a different model for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you are talking about this, the third chi square. Is it?
Okay. But the thing is that these papers that you are citing here, the one from Matsu, so I
talked about
what happens is that they're taking a private for the running, it is very broad.
So sorry, what do you mean by broad of running?
When they take like 0.5 or something like that, around 0, so plus 0.5, minus 0.5, that's really huge.
Yeah.
So this paper, you talk about the last line?
No, the one of the Antonio.
But this number came from that?
Yeah, because I didn't do running, so I code this number.
That's the one in return. If you reduce it, so what happens is that you basically multiply the prior by the library.
Ah, I see.
And then if the prior is too wide, then you're dumping the
I see.
Your
I see. Yeah.
So it's a totally bigger than that, I would say.
It's more like 11%.
I think it was 14, because they recomputed it, but it's not in the paper. So they told me, like, I think it was 14, but I cannot recall for sure what it is.
I see. Yeah, thank you for the comment.
And the other thing is that there's an experiment, which is a future experiment, maybe it happens called Light Bear. I don't know if you know of it.
Light
Bear.
Light
Bear. Yeah. Like Little Bear, but Light Bear.
Light Bear.
What's that?
It's a Japanese thing that is, I don't know exactly who's behind it, but what they're trying to do is put it to measure, among other things, the ionization thing from the beam modes.
Yeah.
It might be interesting for you because you have to.
Yes. Yeah, that will be very interesting.
So,
I see. Yeah, thank you.
Cool. Okay, well, thanks everybody.